And members, now we turn to page 353 of the agenda. Councillor Hull to move in relation to expiation or prosecution of food outlets in the City of Marion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the City of Marion release all information to our community relating to any expiation or prosecutions of food outlets in the City of Marion, and an accessible list of breached food outlets be placed on the City of Marion website. Mr. Mayor, this follows clearly from a newspaper article where after the Ombudsman, the State Ombudsman was involved and actually deemed, and I've highlighted this, in a test case in 2009, he ruled, I assume it was a he back then, ruled that the local authorities could no longer keep secret the identities of restaurants fined for breaching health rules. Now, Mr. Mayor, to put this in context, last year, in terms of the terms of reference of my motion, there would have been one case. The year before two, 2011-2012 was a bad year, we had six. But there was no prosecutions at all during those 3 years. Well, actually, it'd be more like, yeah, it'd be 3 years. So this is not a common occurrence, thankfully. But there are, to me, there are serious offences. There are serious issues for our community. And the City of Marion has a significant responsibility with food outlets in our region. If you think about the number of food outlets we have, collectively, Castle Plaza, Marion, Westfield Marion, Callett Cove, and all the other incidental food outlets throughout the city, you know, even in the street that we're on. It's considerable. And the community have expectations of us to actually police that and to actually educate those facilities. Now, the irony is, Mr. Mayor, that the motion in regards to the inspectorial staff and this have a commonality. And the commonality is one of creating expectations from the community by the deterrent factor. The deterrent factor is if you're running a restaurant or a food outlet and you actually drop your game to this point, then it's very counterproductive for your business. That is a very significant incentive for you to do the right thing in terms of handling food on behalf of our community, where the consequences of poor food hygiene and cooking and all the like can be quite disastrous for an individual. So I'm just saying that on the rare occasion where we do have this situation, we actually put it on our website. Mr. Mayor, in closing, if there is a case like this and we're worried about legal consequence, bring it back to us. We can deal with one a year or even six. And we can actually make a decision as to how far we go with those food outlets and how much resources we expend.
Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Crossland. Do you wish to speak?
Yeah, thank you. I'm obviously in favour of this particular motion. Look, I think the thing that you need to remember is for a restaurant to actually get to the stage where an expiation notice or some form of prosecution takes place, they have to have failed a huge number of visits and they're not really coming up to standards. So if they've got to that stage, I think it's incumbent on us as a council to actually show a bit of duty of care as well to residents, and let's name and shame. Because if they've got to the stage of the expiation notice, then they probably are still an ongoing risk. So for the one account, potentially a year, definitely I think we should be following this.
Worship, look, I've got a question. I'd like a little background as to, briefly, I guess, what happens, what do you have to do to get a written warning? What happens to get an improvement notice? What happens to do a prohibition order? Just so I know the steps until then you actually get a fine.
motivation to hide things from inspectors. So you want inspectors to go and have a good discussion, get things right. If after such warnings and encouragement, a food outlet is still doing the wrong thing, so for example, if they're told you have to get rid of those cockroaches or you have to get rid of those rats that you've got coming into the shop, and they don't when the inspector comes back a month later, for example, that's a realistic sort of example, then they might get an expiation notice. So essentially, if they pay that, then it goes away. But if they either commit a very bad breach of the food standards, for example, by actively mixing food with contaminated material or mould or something like that, or if there are repeated minor breaches, then you might get a prosecution. Then it goes into the court arena. So for those expiation notices and prosecutions, you're talking about a situation where a person's already been warned, already been given a chance, and there's either a serious breach or repeated breaches. And the intent behind the motion is that the public ought to have a right to know if somebody is breaching the standards to that extent. However, I will call upon Ms. Perrin to add to that. And perhaps, Ms. Perrin, you could briefly introduce your title and role.
Thank you. My title is Unit Manager, Community Health and Safety. So the Community Health and Safety Unit, one team of which is the Environmental Health Team. So the Environmental Health Officers administer the Food Act and the standards. And as the Mayor explained, there's a whole range of things that occur. First of all, education, then warnings, working with businesses, then there may be an expiation notice, there may be an improvement notice, so the business gets up to standard.
Can you clarify the improvement notice and prohibition order? That's what I wanted to know, and where they fit perhaps on the compliance pyramid.
So an improvement notice would be fairly early on, so after a warning, and it's to give that food business time to remedy the situation, and then a re-inspection would occur to see if everything has been brought up to the appropriate standard. At the same time, an expiation can be issued, or it may be just the improvement notice. If there was continual issues, or there might have been prosecutions in the past, or if it was something quite serious of a risk to the public, a business can be prohibited from operating, so effectively shut down for a period of time. Under our delegation of authority, the CEO would issue that, and it is for a period of time. A prosecution would be where the Environmental Health Officers wouldn't issue an expiation notice, but they would seek to prosecute through the court to get a higher penalty. Because it's in a public court, it then becomes a public matter. If the business is prosecuted and successfully, so found guilty, that prosecution and the brief details and the name and the address of the food business would go on SA Health's website. That's something that this council could do as well. If an expiation is issued, it's actually not done in the public arena, and a business may be expiated, so they have to pay, it's not really a fine, but an expiation fee. They may remedy the situation so there's no issue anymore the next day or even that day. So I would recommend that be considered if we were going to put those details publicly, because an expiation isn't in a public forum. Only when it's prosecuted through court, it's in a public forum. So there could possibly be some legal ramifications which may need to be explored.
Prohibition order public?
No. If we applied to a court, yes, it would be. Sorry, yes, it could be.
I'm going to move an amendment that the word expiation be deleted and it be restricted to prosecutions. I think it goes too far, and I'm a bit concerned that we might be financially wrecking some businesses, also particularly that may have changed hands in the meantime and be run very hygienically right now.
class of things to happen and you take out part of that class, it's still consistent with the motion. It is perhaps a matter of degree, but I think that's an acceptable amendment. Fair question. I'll put the amendment. First I'll give Councillor Hull, there's no real need to give a right of reply to the amender because there's no one speaking against. Councillor Hull, there were speakers against the motion, I'll give you the right of reply.
Point of order, Your Worship. I don't believe that's Councillor the right standing orders for the meeting. I believe that the amendment needs to be put before the amendment becomes the motion and then the item be closed.
I'm ruling that Councillor Hull will go straight to Councillor Hull's closing address, but you may move dissent from the chair if you wish. All right, Councillor Hull.
I tend to concur with the council about that, but look, it's no big deal. Mr. Mayor, either way, this is a better outcome. If we do happen to have a prosecution, it will be dealt with appropriately by this council, and I'm glad for that much. However, I think that given the rigour involved to get to expiation, I think it's worthy for us to actually go that extra yard, to actually make it very clear to our food handlers that we have high expectations of them on behalf of our community. I do wonder how many of those expiated is multiple offences. We don't know the detail of that. We may be talking about a smaller population of offenders than we really think, and therefore there's probably a degree of habitual neglect in terms of the way they approach their businesses. And this is at the more serious end. This, I've got to stress that. And Councillor Crosland's quite right. To get to this point, there's been a series of visitations by the council, different levels of counselling, ramping it up to get to this point. And as I say, Mr. Mayor, some of the consequences to our people out there that might get that bad burger or whatever it might be, it's more likely than chicken actually, then it can actually have life-enduring effects on those persons, and you know we really shouldn't take it lightly. It's not that I'm setting out to make life hard for business houses. They're doing that themselves. They are clearly doing that themselves to get to this point. And that would be my response to them, Mr. Mayor, if I was challenged by them after this motion, that you think about your own practices before you come and question me.
I'll put the amendment that the words expiation or be deleted. All those in favour, raise your hand. Councillor Valesco, I can't see which way you're voting. Yeah, okay. All those against the amendment? The amendment is carried. I call for a vote on the motion as amended. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And I do take on board the points of order that are raised. I'll have a look at the standing orders and reflect on the decisions I've made. I don't always get it right, I acknowledge that. I'm just trying to be expeditious, but I will reflect on that before the next meeting. Thank you. We go to page 358. Councillor Valescu to move.
I can just get to that page in the computer. I'd like to move as noted. Obviously we're going to revisit the bundle of funding we have that's currently under the Community Funding Partnerships Program. I'd like us to extend it to include funding for renewal, upgrade and purchase of council assets as decided by council. So really over the next 12 to 18 months, we've seen the fairness vary in sort of make a visit in Canberra this evening. So hopefully the Fairness Fairy makes a visit to the city of Marion for some of our sporting facilities. And I want us to be ready of a pool of funding which we can use either for bulk for a single purchase or towards loans for some of these facilities in partnership if our council deems it, first of all, the project worthy, and also we wish to proceed on a fiscal approach. So I guess whilst we have that discussion, I'd like that funding freed up. The history of this funding I have explained here, so I won't go through it. I urge councillors to support my motion.
Yeah, very briefly, to echo what Councillor Valescu said, I think this fund hasn't really been properly utilised. I believe the motion will extend the possibilities of our community accessing this fund and also give councillors more options when considering small projects within the community. And I think the other vital thing that wasn't really mentioned was the fact that this will become a cash reserve fund, so it is locked in and we can actually see that balance of that fund ongoing as we move forward through the budget.
I'm wondering if it is possible for Ms. Montgomery to elaborate on her take on this. I think I understand the finer point of it, and that is checking provisions and taking each case on its merit, but I wonder if she might speak just to clarify.
Thank you. You'll note on page 361 I've proposed an alternative motion having regard to the papers and the discussion at the Audit Committee on the 14th of April. This funding was originally placed in the long-term financial plan as building renewal funding, and what we talked about at the Audit Committee is that using renewal funding to leverage for upgrades would be a great use of the money. My advice would be that if we use this funding for new or upgrade work and we don't set aside adequate provision for building renewals, council may find itself with a substantial funding gap in future years.
Ms. Montgomery, just to clarify, the alternate wording is a completely different sort of proposition to the motion as moved, isn't it? Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. I 100% agree with the intent of this, but I am a little bit concerned about it. Now, keep in mind that if this is voted in the affirmative, it's quite possible that it will benefit things that I'd care very, very deeply about, which is great. But the CFPP was designed for like for not like building renewals, and it was designed to actually get the community to leverage funds as well for like building renewal. And I feel that there's a chance that if those budgeted funds aren't used specifically for that purpose, it could compromise some of our responsibilities to those assets. As I say, keep in mind, it would be of huge benefit to us in terms of being able to leverage and being able to go for funds in a very quick and nimble manner, but it is just a concern about our responsibility to our existing assets.
Questions along the same lines as Councillor Pfeiffer. I just wonder about the integrity of the whole fund. What checks and balances are they going to be put in place for the rating of this fund for purposes that are currently not available to it? What I'm saying is, how do we manage this to make sure that it's not plundered and used without the bigger picture approach that the original intention was, if you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Councillor Hull. I think the only people who can plunder this particular piggy bank are councillors by resolution, if they want to. And I see that I see that Mr. Mifsud's agreeing with that, and if anyone knows about raiding the, or stopping people raiding the piggy bank, it's him. I mean that in a nice way. Yeah. Look, anything like that, if we decide to proceed with one of the master plan ideas or sports facilities, that would be by council resolution. No other questions or comments, then I ask Mr. Valescu, Councillor Valescu, to close the debate.
Look, in, I guess first of all, if opportunities come, you know, and we don't accept this, there won't be any other, you know, well, there's a strong chance there won't be other money otherwise. I guess also council will decide how this money is spent, and we are a careful council. Also, this is only looking at it for the next 12 to 18 months. For these opportunities and some of the ambitions that we have outlined as strategic priorities. We haven't spent much of this money on CCVP, so it's not all of a sudden going to be an issue if we leave it for another 12 to 18 months. I want to keep a duality to it. I want to be able to encourage the smaller clubs that are looking for that like-for-like funding for existing facilities and things like that, or minor upgrades, to still be able to do it, so we can work in our community to support them to get those other grants. But I guess also it allows us for some of those bigger projects. The Asset Sustainability Fund is the extras that we end up when we make savings. Now, we've approached the budget now, we've already made a lot of savings on the front end, so there'll be less money going out at the back end into this fund. So therefore, there may not be that money in the Asset Sustainability Fund for us to actually fund some of those extra things otherwise. I think we do need to put more money into assets, and we may need to look at reprioritising some of our funding in the future. But in the next 12 to 18 months, we'll be able to have a better picture on how to do that. That's why I'd like to open this up. I'd like it to go through council, and if it's going to be a major project, we'll have the section 48. I've already inflated at 10%. Can I be trusted? There you go. I do urge council to support this, but it's just to allow us to use the money as it is now, but also to allow for other opportunity, but obviously not for us to be flippant.
Before we put that to a vote, a comment from Mr. Mifsud is being offered.
Thank you, through the Chair. Just wanted to just seek the consideration of the mover and the seconder in putting forward your motion from, in terms of administering, subject to what Council decides to do shortly, it actually would be much easier to quarantine the CFPP, if Council supports this, as a component of the Asset Sustainability Reserve. It achieves absolutely everything you're seeking to achieve, but rather than setting up a brand new accounting reserve, it can actually be isolated within this Asset Sustainability Reserve. So if you're comfortable with that...
That's fine.
Yep, thank you. If we could just...
Well, that does seem to need a substantial rewording. Well, can we just hear from Councillor... can we hear from Mr. Mifsud about what he's proposing in terms of wording?
Yep, for sure. So through the Chair, it would be along the lines of that the CFPP funding, and that's typed incorrectly up there, it's CFPP, not CFFPP, be quarantined as a cash-backed reserve within the existing Asset Sustainability Reserve, just as simple as that, and achieves everything you're seeking to achieve.
The only question I have with that, it's very awkward to introduce this after all of the councillors have spoken, because technically no one's got a right to speak to this. The intent of the motion is not about asset sustainability. It's about upgrades and new projects. Is it not, Councillor Valescu?
But I see that Mr. Mifsa doesn't want an extra line item or something that might be problematic. Is that basically what it is?
Mr. Mifsa, can you explain?
Yeah, through the chair. So under the Asset Sustainability Reserve at the moment, there's actually a number of intents under the terms of reference. So effectively, the terms of reference as it currently stands covers a minimum of $2 million for a catastrophic infrastructure failure. And there are other items in there already to enable council to use funds for leveraging, which is the purposes you're talking about. All it would do is add another very simple single line to the terms of reference to specifically cover the intent of what your motion is putting forward here, absolutely, as you're looking at it.
Well, then wouldn't we need a motion that has new terms of reference for the Asset Sustainability Fund? Councillor, Mr. Mifsud.
Yes, and at one of the other steps that Council needs to go through with the adoption of the annual business plan and budget is you've got to endorse all the financial policies, which includes that particular policy, so that will be happening as a matter of course, so it's a very straightforward process.
And Mr. Mifsud, what's the problem with adapting the Community Facilities Partnership Program?
Look, because we don't know that much about it, we'll leave it with the original. But we can revisit that later on, that's fine. Yeah, if we do need to change the terms of reference.
All right. Now, that got a bit messy at the end, but we're voting on the motion as printed. So all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by a majority. We move on to a motion by Councillor Hutchinson concerning dog bylaws. Councillor Hutchinson, it's on page 362.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members, I'm taking my motion as previously read, with my comments attached and staff's comments. Members, I think this will intend to simplify our dog bylaws. I think that the dog exercise areas should be a nominated area rather than a blanket ruling. I believe that what we're intending to do here is not going to be an overnight fix. The other thing before I continue is that item 2 has a list approved at this council meeting. That'll need to be the end of June meeting or possibly even the July meeting to give staff time to provide us with a report to that effect, identifying dog exercise areas. So essentially, members, this is an opt-in rather than an opt-out methodology that I'm taking with this. I'll just address a couple of the points made by staff. The question I raise to you is, who is the primary user of our reserves? Is it humans or is it dogs? So ponder that for a moment. The comment about zero tolerance, we are on a policing theme here tonight, I can tell, and rather appropriately, if a dog gets out during a storm, I don't think that's good enough. I think the response that staff have provided, that is not a justified reason not to have a zero tolerance policy. Clearly, the owner has not done enough to secure that animal that it can get out during a storm. So it's about putting the responsibility back on owners rather than saying, well, we'll let things slide through. I think our community expect more of us in this respect, in providing public safety and public nuisance as well. It's not just a safety aspect. It'd be good if the worship could turn off his mic. It's not necessarily a public safety issue, but it's actually a nuisance issue that we're talking about here as well. So just to surmise, my motion that I'm putting forward here is about simplifying the existing dog laws. It's about an opt-in. Where are we going to allow dog exercise areas rather than having some kind of media mix there. Now, I know this is a process for amending bylaws, and certainly we need to go through the appropriate channels with that.
Very simply, I think it does make a lot of common sense. There are all too many incidents of people being severely injured or mildly injured. Make the point, I do recall when very young, my sister and I playing with our family dog, and he became overexcited. My sister ended up with eight stitches in the corner of her mouth, I seem to recall, and that can have quite deep psychological effects beyond the actual injury, which might relatively seem minor. So I do think the ramifications of dog attacks are underrated, and I do think that people are becoming gung-ho with dogs, and I do feel that there are all too many dog breeds that are not very containable. So making provision for all of that, I'm very much in favour of Councillor Hutchinson's motion.
Yeah, look, I'd also like to thank Councillor Hutchinson for bringing this up, who's obviously someone who's well aware that how important the dogs are for people in the community. But one example that I had was an elderly gentleman who would go for walks within my ward, and I think that's very important at his age to be able to get out. He stopped walking or going where he was going. It had an impact because he did have an altercation with a dog that was off a leash. So I think that we made that event made his world a little bit smaller. So if we send a message out there that we want people to be responsible, perhaps people get out there and get out in the community.
Your Worship, I've run at plenty of ovals and there have been dogs off the leash. I haven't had any problems. I think this motion, it punishes the good people because the people who aren't doing the right thing are going to keep doing the wrong thing. And it's going to restrict the liberty of dogs. I draw members' attentions to point three. No dog in the city is going to be allowed off a leash in a public place. So no ovals, dogs will be allowed to run. There's going to be a lot of dogs with pent-up energy, barking late into the, all hours of the night, and there'll be a lot of angry residents as well.
I'd like to speak against, but also ask a question. Places like Hazelmere, now that's not currently a designated dog off-leash area, is it?
Thank you, through the Chair. It's not a designated dog park, but there are different zones within Hazelmere Park that were approved by Council some time ago, and some areas provide for dogs to be off-leash and some areas provide that dogs must be on a leash, particularly near the playground and the courts area.
So does that therefore mean you'd have to keep your dog on the leash at Hazelmere?
Yes.
Right.
So that wouldn't probably need to come back to council through a separate process through the open space team.
Right. Look, Your Worship, my...
That's incorrect information.
Your Worship, I think this... Look, I do agree with the intent of this, and I get a lot of dog complaints in areas that are built up with not a lot of open space. You know, people use open space for exercising dogs. There are accidents, there are incidents. I get a lot of complaints, especially around a few specific facilities that we've got down our way. I just think this swings the pendulum a little bit too far, and especially after we've just had our dog bylaws go through, which is quite a lengthy process, mind you, only last year. It just feels like we're just swinging that pendulum a bit too far the other direction. The zero tolerance thing also, look, I mean, this is a bit extreme. I mean, I've had a situation quite a few years ago. I lived in Mitchell Park and I had a very mild-mannered beagle. One morning there was a cat in the front lawn. The dog saw the cat, darted through my legs. I was in my jocks at the time. I'm belting down Sturt Road and my jocks chasing the thing. Now, if I had if that, no, I know, it's funny, isn't it? Well, boxes, actually, but, you know. But, you know, if there had been an inspector out that particular morning and this kind of thing was around, I would have been fine for, you know, I mean, it was an accident. It was a mild-mannered beagle. I mean, come on, really. That's... I'm right there with Councillor Hutchinson. I think the intent of this is good. I just think it's a little bit too draconian.
I'll speak against it because I also think to go from a whole city where we have dogs under effective control, which at times they're not, to this, we need to work on this and find some middle ground first.
Yeah, I'm also against the motion for a number of reasons. One, I think it's a sledgehammer to crack a nut. I know we have a lot of dog walkers use Halleck Cove Beach. This motion would effectively ban all dogs from Halleck Cove Beach. We are going through public place, any public place. The only place that we will have the dogs will be the new Trott Park Reserve, because under the guidelines we've already been told that unless it's got a set amount of height fence, the airlock for dogs to get in and out, and the other provisions, council is not insured to have dogs in those areas. So effectively, until that reserve becomes an official dog park, you are saying to all dog owners, there is no way you can take your dog off a leash in our city. The second point is, I also know that we've had a number of community engagements. Everyone has been against the nature of this motion, and yet we're now considering going against the community consensus. We're also trying to introduce, if Council Point 6 is on there, a change to state government legislation, which we haven't got the authority to amend. But those are just a few reasons. I'll be voting against the motion as a whole.
Other speakers or questions? Question, Councillor Hull?
It seems like we need some really high-level advice on this, and having thought about referring this to the Chair of the Dog and Cat Management Board.
Councillor Hull, who's the question directed to?
You.
Well, I haven't thought about that, actually. Ms Perrin, would you like to comment?
When the bylaws were reviewed or technically rescinded last year and new bylaws were approved and enacted, part of that process is to go through the Dog and Cat Management Board. When Council adopted its animal management plan, part of that process is that it needs to go to the Dog and Cat Management Board. This actual report hasn't gone to the Dog and Cat Management Board.
The legislative process is indeed described on page 364. Councillor Gard, is that a question?
Well, perhaps...
you've already spoken.
It ought to be an amendment.
No, you've already spoken, okay. Councillor Gard. Councillor Byram.
Thanks, Your Worship. Just sort of a bit of a question about the dog clubs. Because my understanding when we did the tour of the sports centres earlier this year was that there was great angst against having any fencing of the area that the dog clubs were using because of the training that they were doing with the dogs, and those dogs are not on leash. So I just wonder how this would affect that aspect of things with dogs as well.
Did Ms Perrin want to comment on that? And Councillor Hutchinson, of course, Councillor Hutchinson can reply in a moment.
Yes, thank you. Through the Chair, as the motion currently stands, number three, that's putting forward the motion that all dogs be effectively on a lead, that would mean that in every public place within the City of Marion, dogs would need to be on a lead. So dogs would not be able to be off lead and under effective control in any public park or place within the City of Marion.
Councillor Byram, did you wish to say more? Councillor Blisk, you've spoken, haven't you?
Yeah, I just had a question. Is it possible to defer this? Because it seems like
it would only be possible if there was a motion and you've already spoken.
No.
Any other speaker? Councillor Westwood?
I move that this motion be deferred. Is that okay?
Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Kerry. All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against? The motion is deferred by that, by procedural motion. To which date, Councillor Westwood?
I'd like to seek suggestions.
Councillor Hutchinson, got a date?
I think if members had actually taken the time to read the
bylaw... No, just give us a suggestion.
End of July, then?
Okay, the last council meeting in July. That, Councillor Westwood, happy?
Yes.
All right. So
thank you.
It's adjourned to the last council meeting in July. And that was...
Yeah, and we're going to have a... How are we going to get that information in the meantime?
That'll be up to you to drive that, Councillor Hutchinson. Let's move to the next motion, page 366. Councillor Gard to move in relation to water management, flood mitigation measures and needs. Councillor Gard.
Just looking for my place here. We talked about this subject last night, courtesy of John Silverblade, Manager Silverblade, and it is a subject that certainly is being embraced by council staff, but I do really seriously worry about the degree of urgency. I do feel in reading the experiences in New South Wales over the last few weeks, and in the knowledge that weather change does seem to be upon us in South Australia, we are getting some really, you could say, strange events, drier periods, wetter periods, more sustained rain, more sustained dry periods. I look at the Sturt Creek and its source up at Stirling, and I think that if you have a 100-year flood or even a 50-year flood or even something less than that on the Adelaide Plains, that infers a great deal more rain in the Adelaide Hills from the same, call it depression or a storm. And that in turn infers a great deal of water coming down from a very great height through the Sturt Creek system, Sturt River, Sturt Creek system, from Stirling, and that comes down through Coromandel Valley and Flagstaff Hill. So you can imagine the pitch of incline. I think the potential is far more dramatic than maybe we are really envisaging, and therefore I have asked that management look at this more immediately. Sometime in the next 6 months we have some sort of perhaps interim report of their findings, because I know Mr. Silverblade only last night said that we had been taking care of business down at the mouth end of the Sturt Creek, or drain as some people call it, but far from that being the case at the upper end, and that is the end that is certainly going to receive impact first and very harshly. I think the degree of damage and potential loss of life is quite dramatic in the light of what we do have seen in the eastern states recently. So it is a motion that maybe some people will see as redundant to our needs, but it's really more based on the time frame that I put in the motion, that we at least become more informed sooner as a new council particularly.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
again, most of the information is contained in the report, and I'm not going to read it out to you. The bullet points of this motion are that, as councillors are aware, we are due to relocate our nursery operations by the end of August. The cost of that move will be roughly around $82,000, which is already in the council budget. But when I've been looking into the actual productivity of the nursery and the actual viability as a business, figures really already don't stack up. The cost, I believe, to buy the plants that we currently need, even on a retail price, is $136,000. If we actually joined up with Onkaparinga or other councils, or even went to do a tender process, I believe that that amount will be substantially reduced. The figures may have varied slightly. Basically, as I was investigating the various costs, there were some changes, and the nursery started to get cheaper and cheaper. But even with the final figures, I think the ongoing savings will be substantial, and it gives us the flexibility to actually buy plants from different commercial retailers, and they can actually supply any plants we need with provenance. And a footnote to this is that we already outsource quite a number of our plants already, because the nursery that we have can't actually supply quite a number of the mature trees and plants that we currently need. So if we actually do decide to keep going with our streetscape policy and plant more trees, they aren't going to be really produced by our own nursery anyway.
I'm happy to second that, Your Worship. I think the measure's long overdue, and if it succeeds, Councillor Verrill will be happy, as we had last time.
Is there anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Lescu?
I've asked the staff the risks involved, and also if there's any, I guess, potential false economy.
Mr. Nipsel?
Through the Chair, in regards to the financials, our advice, our strong advice to Council would be that if this is the path you want to head down, and certainly on the face of it there's certainly merit there, that we go through and actually provide you with an assessment of the specific data to ensure that you make a fully informed decision. So from a financial point of view, that's the key thing that I would advise you to do. In regards to any other aspects, Mr. Patterson's here. He might want to respond to the rest of that.
Mr. Patterson, please come forward. Can I ask you, Mr. Mifsud, are you actually disputing any of the figures that are there in the report?
Through the Chair, no. They're approximates, and Councillor Crossland is absolutely quite right on the face of it. There's potentially savings that can be made. All I'm highlighting is that it would be a good, prudent approach to actually substantiate through market testing, just to make sure that the retail figures that we're working off of are appropriate, and to shore up the figures for Council.
Yeah, like the Marion Leisure and Fitness, you know. Mr. Patterson, please, what would you like to contribute to answer Councillor Valescu's question?
Yes, good evening, members. Councillor Valescu, could you just repeat that question?
Yes, from a running point of view, what are the risks involved that we potentially face, and what are the issues we need to consider if this were to move forward? Obviously, I want to save money, but what are the considerations from your end that you think councillors should be aware of? As far as staffing and potential costs and any timeliness issues, things like that, as far as getting the seed stock, what's the advantage of us doing it? What's it?
Through the Chair, we've assessed the issues in regards to the nursery being shifted away from our operations. In assessing through that, we're confident that the local nurseries could provide the current service that we provide. Issues around plants of provenance and remnant species, local nurseries could supply those plants. I guess one of the main issues with regard to the nursery was in relation to the fact that it did provide subsequent assistance with staffing, with Indigenous staffing and staffing with special needs, that we've had trainees over the past 3 or 4 years, and that's been of assistance to us. But you know, the core duty of the nursery is to provide plants, and local nurseries definitely could provide that service for us.
Did you wish to contribute more, Councillor Blisker?
I guess, would there be issue with staffing, or is that something we'd need to discuss through a separate forum as a result of this decision?
Yeah, we currently have two staff in the nursery. We also have some vacancies in the open spaces area. Potentially those two staff could be relocated to that area. So we just need to work through the issues with any potential redeployment.
Thank you. Look, I'm happy to support this. I haven't seen any strong argument otherwise. I guess if we, regardless of whether the motion is passed or not, if we can be provided with some of that market testing, because then if we have the advice and realise that it's a false economy or anything like that, we can make that decision. But if it's not, then we know that we have made the right decision in this instance.
Yes, my comment being that if the motion is passed, I wouldn't want it to be seen as a reflection on the performance of the nursery rather than running cost, and that you know, the staff that we have, the two staff that we have devoted, be acknowledged for the work they've done. I think that's pretty important in this sort of situation, and that it be explained to them that or to all the staff in that area, that we are trying to not only save on costs but move forward as far as our future options are concerned.
Yes, thank you.
A couple of questions. Do the City of Mitcham, Holbrook Bay or West Torrens have a nursery?
No, Councillor Hull.
In the event that this motion gets through tonight, what are the typical places of purchase for such trees? Have you got any in mind, Trees for Life, or I'm just trying to get my head around where we're going with this, that's all.
Yeah, through the Chair. We use a variety of local nurseries that help us with our tree planting program. As Councillor Gard identified, we do have a percentage of plants that we do need to resource from those nurseries, and we have over the past 5 or 6 years, and we'll continue to source those plants. But we do use a variety of local nurseries in and around the Marion area. We go out and get prices, and we have a competitive process in the purchase of those plants, so there's no shortage of available plant stock in the surrounding local nurseries.
Mr. Mayor, I take Councillor Lesby's point that the comments are very money-driven, and I guess that is a big concern for Council, and that's why I'm asking these questions. My last question is, can I have a guarantee that any trees or plants purchased by the City will not be purchased from interstate?
Yes, through the Chair. I'm very confident that the local Adelaide nurseries can definitely supply us with 100% of the stock that we require. If we require any exotic type species or local Indigenous species, the local nurseries all have all the stock that we use.
Can I have a guarantee that no plants or trees purchased by the City will come from interstate?
Councillor Hull's asking a question. Mr. Patterson, can you add anything to your previous answer or not?
I'm 100% confident that our local nurseries can supply all the stock that we require. In my experience, all the stock that we have required, they have been able to supply. We haven't had to source any plants interstate. To give a guarantee, I could be 100% sure from a guarantee perspective in the case that we had a certain issue with a particular species that in Adelaide, an issue happened and it needed to be sourced externally. But the local nurseries generally can provide all the plants that we use.
Right, Councillor Hull, did you have any more to contribute? No? Councillor Pfeiffer was next.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, this does look very, very good on the face of it, but that's the words that I've been hearing throughout this item tonight, on the face of it. I think, we've been hearing also that a market assessment can be provided. Now, Mr. Patterson has provided a very good verbal assessment. I'd like to actually see something a bit more quantitative, and I think it needs to happen before you pass a motion like this, not after the fact. If we're talking, it's not the sort of thing that we can easily rescind. If we do get it wrong, we can't just sort of go, we'll rescind the motion, put the nursery back. I mean, it's hard to turn it back on afterwards. So I think, look, it's a darn good idea. I commend Councillor Crossland for actually bringing this to the table. I commend his eagle eyes for looking for these things. But I just think that sort of assessment and the assessment of the long-term viability of that particular industry needs to be done up front and not after the fact.
That gives rise to a question. I'll take the opportunity to ask Mr. Patterson. From when Councillor Crossland first seriously raised the issue, what investigations have been made in terms of supply from other nurseries for what we need? And why isn't that in the report?
Yes, through the chair, we have been obviously sourcing plants from our local nurseries for a period of time. We receive regular lists of plants and the allocated prices for each of those plants in all our competing nurseries. The lists that we have are extensive and they cover all the species that we use. We only use a select variety of species that we've identified in our tree precinct guidelines, and I'm very confident that the local nurseries can definitely supply us with the species that we require and use.
Oh, thank you. Now there were other speakers, Councillor Westwood.
I didn't quite hear a term, the competitive. I suppose the prices are competitive to the cost that we'd incur in raising them ourselves, raising the plants ourselves in the nursery, I presume.
Yes, through the chair. Yes, the figure that we quoted, the 136,000 approximate figure, is based on the prices that we have received from our nurseries. That's the that we average it out over the the tube stock to a medium to a large variety of plants, and we just break that average out. And it is a competitive process. There are a number of nurseries, and they are competing against each other. And we do shop around to make sure we get the best price for the plants that we do require. The large bulk of the plants we do grow and produce in our nursery, but we have been acquiring plants from local nurseries in the past.
That doesn't quite answer the question, sorry. So the price that we have to pay from nurseries would compare favourably to the cost of raising any plants ourselves in our own nursery. Would that sound about right? Yes?
Yes, through the chair. Yes, that's right. In the figures that we've done and from the calculations, it is a very competitive process with local nurseries, and it is very cost-effective seeking these plants externally.
Okay, other speakers? Councillor Kerry.
Glad you'd like to support this motion. Thanks very much, Peter, for your report. It's very detailed, but I think that at the end of the day, if we're talking about cost cutting, the figure's 136,000, I think, and if now other councils and Ongaparinga, West Torrens don't have a nursery, don't see why we should have one. So I'll be voting in favour of the motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a question to the staff, and that is, my concern is around maturity of plants, and I think that's something that I've always been batting on about. You talked about tube stock extensively. In terms of the maturity of our plants in the nursery versus what can be bought out on market, is there a difference at all? And how substantial is that difference? And do you have any further comments in that regard?
Through the chair, no, Councillor Hutchinson, there's not a lot of difference. We keep our plants usually up to 3 or 4 years. We like to get those plants out in their third year at the latest. On occasions, we haven't been able to do that for a variety of reasons, and those plants do become quite root-bound in the nursery, and they go into poor form and health, but definitely seeking mature trees externally, there is no difference in what we provide in the nursery.
A subsequent question, I guess, Your Worship. In that case, is there any potential for increasing the maturity of trees that we are planting out there? Assuming that there is a cost difference where we might be able to afford that within the same budget.
Yeah, it's a good question, Councillor Hutchinson. I guess in handling mature plants, obviously once they get to a certain age, they do become quite difficult to handle with the certain weights and heights. So 3 to 4 years is generally the maximum we would like to manual handle those trees. Once they start to get more advanced in age and maturity, they do become very difficult, and then you start talking about manual lifting devices to assist. So I guess seeking to plant trees of greater maturity becomes a bit more problematic. But in specialised planting arrangements where we need to do some dramatic impact type planting in a very high profile area, then we have considered that, and we have required the use of small cranes, etc., to help assist in that type of arrangement.
Yeah, I guess thanks for that. That's, I probably wasn't thinking about craning trees in, but certainly in terms of increasing the size as when they go in. So the trees that we currently put in, can you just give us an average height? Like what are we talking when we say 3 to 4 years? I mean, each species obviously going to be different, but sort of borderline, can you give us a couple of quick examples, and just to help us understand?
Can I have a point of order? Is this relevant to my motion, or is this a conversation that could be had privately?
Well, I'm trying to determine whether outsourcing will actually provide an additional benefit in our tree planting program. I'm talking about the outcome, not just the financials, what the actual amenity that we can provide.
Through the chair, yes, they're very similar, Councillor Hutchinson. Our more mature trees that we do plant vary in between 2 to 3 metres in height, down to our smaller trees, our tube stock, which we mass plant, obviously, 10, 20 centimetres long. So there is quite a significant variation in those heights.
Thank you. I will actually just give a bit more detail because it's clear that there's bits of the report and the motion that have not been read. From my point of view, there are no negatives to this motion. This is the first time that all the stars have aligned. You've got the cost of building a brand new nursery in the southern suburbs because the old nursery is going to be completely demolished. You've got two vacancies which currently completely match the two staff that work in the nursery that could actually then assist our streetscape policy and assist the teams planting trees. And there were a few comments made of any benefits. Firstly, there is a cost benefit. The $136,000 is at the top end of the commercial price. So I've actually gone higher than it probably is, and I probably didn't make that point. We already buy a substantial number of plants from at least five different South Australian nurseries, and the majority of our mature trees are already sourced externally. On top of that, we mentioned that there had been some disability Indigenous training. In fact, when I started looking at the budget, that's already been cut. So if you want to add that back in, that's another $35,000-$40,000. I haven't focused on the 4.5% ongoing increase to staff costs, so that's again not really added in. And finally, I have done a lot of investigations. If you read Peter's report, I've had a lot of conversations with Peter and his staff. The question was raised: 26,000 plants. Well, it's a how long is a piece of string to Peter? Is how many plants is he going to need next year? That depends on us, basically. But unfortunately, our nursery is already functioning at capacity, so if you want more plants, we're going commercial anyway. We're not going to try and grow more unless you want to expand the staff costs we already have. So the bottom line is we can't grow the plants we need already, and the plants we do grow, we're not competitive. We could buy a lot cheaper, and we could actually look at partnering with other councils to buy cheaper still. So I'm happy to take any other questions, but in closing, I can't see any points raised that would prevent us taking this opportunity, because it is a one-off opportunity. If we don't go for this motion now, we're building a brand new nursery, and once it's built, there won't be many in this room that want to knock it back down again after we spent $82,000 on it.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, that's carried. Just let you know how we're going for time, members. There are going to be two motions without notice, which will be confidential matters. We've just got one more motion on the agenda, so glad to proceed with that. It looks like it could be dealt with in 5 minutes, so I hope so. We'll proceed with it, and then because there's a little bit of typing to do, we're planning a 5-minute adjournment, and then we'll deal with those two confidential motions. So I'll ask Councillor Blessinger to move.
I'll declare the motion as read. There is a photo up there. Basically, I've had some residents express concerns about the wooden cross beams on power poles. This is particular to the Plimpton Park area. But as you can see, they corrode. I have seen them in the past where they have actually been quite dangerous. But also, this gentleman told me where he basically shouted at a police officer to stop him from stepping on one of the wires that had fallen because of these failing. So just as you can see, this photo here, what the SA Power Network is doing is they're just putting a cross beam, but it's actually corroding. If you go to the couple more photos, not this one, that one there, you can see how they start to bow. If you go to the next photo, thanks to Tori, the one after that, you can see it bowing there, next one over. If you look in the right on the right-hand side, one suburb, and there you go, it's on the edge again, and that's right before all those new wires. Those wires are relatively new because of all the subdivisions that have happened around Aldridge Avenue. So look, if they're going to upgrade it, they may as well change the brace. I know it's going to inconvenience whilst they do it, but it's for safety's sake. So that's something I'd like us to get onto SA Power Networks to do it. We don't own it anymore. In 1997 or 98, it was sold off. So it is a community safety issue. So.